Twitter says that it will take legal action against Elon Musk for pulling out of a takeover deal. Musk accused the platform of what he called a material breach of their agreement. But will that be enough to win the case, and what's likely to happen next? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. One of the richest people on the planet says that he's changed his mind about buying Twitter. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says that fake accounts could amount to a fifth of Twitter's users. That's four times more than he was initially told. The company denies this and says that it will sue Musk to push through the deal. We'll begin our discussion in just a moment, but first a report from Al Jazeera's Fintan Monaghan.
A $44 billion deal to buy Twitter is the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, says he's terminating the contract 3 months after locking in the agreement.
I think really quite a revolutionary technology.
He accuses the company of failing to provide information about fake accounts on the platform and whether they make up fewer than 5% of users. Twitter's board chair says it kept its end of the contract and is planning to sue.
I think Twitter probably would prevail in this, I would think, simply because there is a deal. Now, Musk can get out by paying $1 billion fine, or a billion dollar penalty. And my guess is that that's what he's trying to prevent, is not having to make that $1 billion payment.
For many, the focus now turns to stocks and whether Twitter and Tesla, which Musk owns, will take a hit.
I think investors want to see Musk just get back to focusing on Tesla, SpaceX, because Twitter, from the beginning, it's just really been a distraction. It's been overhanging the stock.
Musk's bid to take over Twitter stirred controversy back in April. Critics were concerned the Tesla CEO would promote misinformation on the popular social media site, especially on matters related to politics and health. Musk said the acquisition was about stopping censorship and defending freedom of speech. Analysts say the billionaire may have experienced buyer's remorse.
He's trying to walk away. And the way these contracts are structured, it's very difficult for buyers to walk away. These contracts are drafted with to provide a high degree of certainty for the sellers.
Now, terminating the $44 billion contract will have to play out on the legal front. And social media will surely have plenty to say about it. Fintan Monaghan, Al Jazeera.
So let's bring in our guests. From New York, we're joined by Jim Anderson, CEO of Social Flow, a tech and social content distribution company. From London, Charles Arthur, author of Social Warming, a book on social media's inherent unavoidable effects. And from New York, Ian Myers, founder of Oceans XYZ and a consultant on social media content strategy and branding. Gentlemen, welcome to you all. Jim, we'll start with you. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this deal and Elon Musk and everything that's going on right now, I think we need to get back to basics for just a few minutes at least. I'm willing to bet that for every avid Twitter user, there are just as many people who don't have an account, aren't interested in the premise, or have an account and don't use it and just don't get what it's for. Why would anyone be willing to pay billions to buy Twitter?
Well, it's all about attention and consumer attention. And the 300 million or so people on Twitter are very influential. If you want to reach politicians, if you want to reach political reporters, Twitter is a great place to do that. So I think Elon Musk's attention originally was genuine to Twitter. It is an important platform. Just look at how former President Donald Trump used, or in many cases misused, Twitter to reach his base and deliver his message. So I think Elon Musk's instincts were, wow, this is really powerful, really important. I just don't think he thought through very clearly what it really meant to get it, and this pretext that the bots and spam are a real problem. I mean, that's nothing more than a pretext. It's complete nonsense, and he's just trying to manufacture a reason to get out of the deal because the price has since declined.
And what, Jim, for someone who doesn't know, what are we talking about when we're talking about bots and fake accounts and spam? What does all of that mean?
Well, it turns out it's remarkably difficult to actually quantify. I mean, Twitter will allow you to sign up a fictitious satirical account. I could sign up an account that says Elon Musk's inner brain and start tweeting what I think, you know, Elon Musk might be thinking. There's plenty of satire accounts like that. Some people would say that's fraud. Some people would say that's satire and comedy. And so you get into those kinds of issues. And the analogy I've used, trying to understand the number of spam and bot accounts on Twitter is a little bit like trying to count the number of fish in the ocean, right? It changes all the time. It depends on where you look. What you saw today is going to be very different than what you see tomorrow. And is a very moving ecosystem of accounts being created, deleted, Twitter takes them down. So there's a whole lot of activity going on. And again, it's just a complete nonsensical pretext.
Charles Arthur, is Twitter good for society? To what extent are most users simply reinforcing their own worldview when they scroll through their timeline? It's an echo chamber, isn't it? Sure, it can make people feel better about themselves and their point of view on a whole range of issues, but is that good for people and is it a good long-term business plan?
Sometimes it's good for society, sometimes it is useful. For example, in the UK, we just had a week where we had a political crisis and ministers were resigning left, right and centre, and they were doing it on Twitter. They were putting out their resignation letters there, which all led to the build-up of pressure against the Prime Minister who wanted to stay. Sri Lanka, for example, you've had a protest against the government there, and a lot of that has been helped along to some extent by social media. So Twitter has a role. I mean, you know, the question of why would someone want it? It's if it didn't exist, you'd want to invent it because it is so useful for spreading news around. But when you haven't got things like that going on, then yes, it tends to just fuel animosity because of the way that it works. Because for Twitter, engagement is the thing. It needs to show people adverts, so it needs them using the service. And the way to do that is either to show them things that they agree with completely or else to show them things they really disagree with completely and will argue about. So basically, the business model is make people argue with each other so they spend longer on Twitter, which is slightly away from where the actual utility of the service is.
To make it useful, though, Charles, you have to be following the right sorts of people, don't you?
Well, you do, and this is one of Twitter's real failings over the years, is that it was so useful from the start, and it became so useful really from 2009 when the news story about a plane crashing in the Hudson River went worldwide, and that was on Twitter before it was on any of the main media services, with a picture showing what had actually happened. And that really demonstrated how Twitter could make a difference to the information flow around the world. The trouble is, it's never managed to actually unlock the way in which you can show people things that do meet their interests, even though we show Twitter what it is we're interested in by who we choose to follow all the time. So there's a sort of inherent contradiction. And Elon Musk kept on saying that, you know, he was going to unlock Twitter's value, quite apart from all the spam and the bot stuff. That's yet to be done. And you know, it's a sort of project that maybe would actually be worth doing if he actually thought it was worth doing, but clearly he's changed his mind about it.
They say, Charles, that Twitter knows what we're interested in because of who we choose to follow. This is a point that I want to put to Ian Myers. Ian, as a journalist, I have a Twitter account. I've had one for many years. I hardly ever post, though, because I feel personally that I don't have much to add to the shouting and the arguing that it goes on. Now, sometimes, as a journalist, it's good for breaking news, as Charles was just saying. Twitter users are usually well ahead of the mainstream media. But Twitter, the company, when it tweets news, is usually well behind the curve and tells me things that I don't know. Its ads are badly targeted, at me anyway, as far as I'm concerned. I'm forever having to tell it that I'm not interested in nearly everything that it pushes at me. Now, if that's my experience with 7,000 followers, how many other users are getting the same? Is Twitter a good business? Is it well run? And is it worth spending billions of dollars on?
It's a good question. I think it depends on your perspective. I mean, for journalists, certainly part of the utility is, at least in the US, I'm not sure the extent in the UK and around the rest of the world, journalists have started to create their own personal followings as opposed to generating followings for the outlets that they work for. So you're starting to see media personalities who utilize Twitter to sort of make themselves popular, and they either migrate to Substack and start selling their reporting directly to consumers, or they sort of use it to get more high leverage jobs or to sort of become news outlets of their own. And so it has a certain use for those people. It's a good question whether Twitter is a good business. I think they didn't make money until 2018. That, you know, for a long time wasn't considered necessary as a tech company. In terms of it being well run, you know, it's had a lot of employee turnover. They haven't been able to stably show any kind of net income other than times when Donald Trump and the election of 2016 and beyond were driving engagement from users. And, you know, frankly, they have a board that seems very interested in their own wealth and not really interested in Twitter's growth as a service. And that is also reflected in upper management, where Twitter has had a lot of stagnant product development for many, many years. Now, in the last year, they've released a slew of new features. They're experimenting with things like Spaces. They just announced Duo Tweets. They've sort of, Twitter Blue is their kind of monetization angle. So they've done a lot more rapid iteration in the last year than they did maybe in the last decade, which gives me hope that the service will improve. But I think it has been just very stagnant, riding on the coattails of its immense utility for over a decade.
But then again, Ian, they're going to become like Meta, aren't they? If they keep fiddling with things, you look at what Meta has done to Facebook and with Instagram. You have a product that everybody initially loves and likes to use, and then the company wants to squeeze even more revenue out of it, and ends up, in the case of Instagram, and as far as I'm concerned, ends up ruining it.
Yeah, I think Twitter is in a slightly unique position vis-a-vis Meta's products. It is, as Charles mentioned, an incredibly high utility product. It's not something where you can see your friends, see what they're eating. I mean, you can do that, but the core use case of it is the rapid spread and share of information, which can be good, it can be bad. That's, you know, depends on what it is, who's doing it. But it is an extremely utilitarian product. And that, I think, is why they haven't been forced to go down the road that Meta has been forced to go down, which is largely through acquisition. Most of their own internal product development has been deemed failures. They acquire other businesses because their audience continues to age out of Facebook. And now, you know, Facebook is primarily either used in sort of not US, North America, around Europe, around the rest of the world, or it's used by more elderly populations in the US, North America, and Europe. So, you know, they don't have that base of utility, and Twitter has, again, really ridden on that and has stagnated their products because.
All right, let's get to the issue then at hand. Jim, what's gone wrong with the Musk deal? You alluded to it earlier. Why does it look to have fallen apart? Is Musk simply trying to drive down the price at which he buys here, or are his grievances genuine?
Well, I'm not even sure Elon Musk knows what he wants out of Twitter. He is absolutely trying to drive down the price. Common sense would say, why would you want to pay $54.20 a share for something that's now worth, you know, in the low $30 per share? So we're talking $10 or $15 billion worth of value, billion with a B there. And, you know, you don't get to be one of the world's richest men by being dumb about finances. So he's smart in a tactical sense. But he's causing an enormous amount of damage to Twitter right now. He's criticizing their management. He's criticizing their employees. He's criticizing their entire ecosystem. And Twitter has 7,500 employees who have families and mortgages and jobs and those kinds of things. I think, you know, it's interesting to look at the spectacle, if you will, of what Elon Musk is doing. And it's kind of amusing in one sense. You know, rich person sort of gets to play by whatever rules he wants to. It's not at all amusing if you're a Twitter employee, or maybe if you're a Tesla shareholder and you feel like this is just a big giant distraction from where Elon Musk should be focusing his attention.
Charles, Twitter says that it's going to take legal action to ensure that this deal goes through as originally agreed. How can it do that? Can it do that?
Oh, it absolutely can do that, because Musk signed a deal to acquire the company for, you know, the $44 billion, the $54.20 a share. He signed that without really having done any proper due diligence. And then afterwards started asking for all these details about, well, how do you define spam? How do you define bots? How do you, where are all these numbers? And since that sort of period back in April has been, making more and more demands for rather weird numbers, wanting to sort of get some sort of backup, initially suggesting it was so that he could, verify the numbers, and most recently saying, wow, these numbers are all completely made up, which is sort of the fact. You can't, how do you define a bot? It's really hard. But yes, the deal actually contains a penalty clause of $1 billion if he breaks off the deal. But equally, Twitter could. I mean, there are sort of legal ways in which they could say, well, I'm sorry, you're on the hook for the whole $44 billion. Let's go to court and we'll force you to pay it. One suspects that the final number he's going to pay is going to be somewhere between those two numbers, probably more towards the low end than the high end. But everyone who's looked at what the deal actually says in any detail, people with a great deal more expertise than me, it's pretty confident that what Twitter has is going to stand up in court much better than Musk's claims are.
Ian, Musk is the CEO of Tesla. He's the man behind SpaceX. Why on earth would he want Twitter? What's in it for him personally? And what would Twitter look like under Musk's ownership? Would it be good for Twitter users?
That hasn't really been outlined too much. I mean, Elon has talked a lot about what he's going to do with Twitter. It's been mostly vague. There's a lot of confidence in him as a leader because of the success that Tesla's seen, that SpaceX has seen, that a lot of the other projects, even things like Boring Company, the tunneling business that he's been involved in, has given investors a lot of confidence. It's given shareholders a lot of confidence. I think the news we're seeing coming from leaks around from Twitter employees says that nobody there is really super thrilled about it. So I think for them, it's not going to be great. I also don't think there's a lot of evidence that he's good at taking over companies that are this size and scaling them better. He's grown incredible companies, PayPal, SpaceX, Tesla, from almost nothing. But it's an entirely different business to take over a company with nearly 10,000 employees that's a fully mature platform and turn it into something much better. And I think, frankly, the evidence, that he can do that, which is a very different task, is limited. So I'm not entirely in agreement with the people who are super confident in his abilities. I would also say there's been a lot of speculation that this was, purely a way for him to sell Tesla stock without having to give a reason. He'll have liquidated almost $7.5 billion, even if he pays the $1 billion breakup fee and spends $100 million fighting litigation. He's someone who's famously, most of his wealth is kept in stocks, which means, he probably doesn't have a lot of cash on hand to do the things he wants to do. And so there is a lot of speculation that this could also have been entirely a way for him to liquidate a substantial amount of money without too much scrutiny from the SEC, which is an organization that he's not too friendly with. And I honestly wouldn't put it past him. He takes a lot of learnings from the Donald Trump school of Twitter usage, and sort of the look at my right hand while my left does something else is something that we've seen a lot of people do before, and Elon Musk wouldn't be the first or last person to take advantage of.
Jim, I see you nodding vigorously there. Ian was running through that incredible Elon Musk CV. Given that, why are Twitter's staff so opposed to him becoming its owner?
Well, because he has not articulated a compelling vision other than Twitter is terrible and I want it to be better. Oh, by the way, Twitter is overstaffed. By the way, Twitter employees don't go to the office enough. By the way, Twitter's management is terrible. If you're a Twitter employee, you're like, well, goodness gracious, that doesn't make me feel very good about what I'm doing and the hard work I've put in. And maybe you could get over that if he had a real clear and credible vision about I'm going to do this with Twitter. But when you start hearing him talk about free speech, his ideas around free speech are mostly nonsensical, quite honestly. Just last night, he banned somebody, he blocked somebody on Twitter, which, you've got a paragon of free speech on Twitter. who blocks somebody else on Twitter in some minor Twitter dispute. It's just kind of comical. And so it doesn't lead to a lot of confidence as an employee that you're going to feel like, wow, Elon Musk is to the rescue and he's going to make this a better place. He'll mess around. He'll criticize us. He'll lay some people off. He'll cut costs. He'll issue some edicts. And then maybe he'll get distracted by some other shiny object and I'm left trying to clean up the damage.
Charles, picking up on that free speech angle, I mean, ask you the same question that we put a little earlier about what Twitter would look like under Musk's ownership. And what does this whole saga tell us about the importance to society of a platform like Twitter? Should social media platforms be regulated in such a way that they can't be owned by someone who will soon move on to a new shiny object, as Jim just said? And should they be more strictly regulated in terms of their content and what people can and can't say on them?
Well, yeah, OK, so that's a question for the hour-long special, isn't it? I mean, if you don't want someone flighty, then you get someone who just focuses their entire time on that. That's a guy called Mark Zuckerberg, who totally does have control of Facebook and, you know, the Meta platform and Instagram, and has control of the voting shares, majority of the voting shares. So, I don't know, sort of pick your poison, really. You know, Elon Musk in charge of Twitter, how would it look? I think it would look very messy. I think it would sort of zig and zag between different things. And he would come in one day and say, OK, what we need to do is much more free speech. And then he'd come in the next day and say, oh, this free speech stuff is terrible. You know, it's really just a big problem. We should really, you know, moderate more. The problem that the platforms have is that they, as I said earlier, they're totally predicated on the idea of holding your attention so they can show you adverts. And the way to hold your attention is to show you things that you get outraged by and which you then feel you have to argue back against. And that's the model, the sort of underpinning model that the algorithms use. So if you shift to some other sort of model, then it sort of stops looking like any of the social networks we have now. You have something where you're rewarded perhaps for the value of your input. And the way that it works is entirely different. Maybe it's a subscription model, which again is something that Musk did actually talk about vaguely as all the ideas he had. He was talking about having more subscriptions for Twitter. But then the problem becomes, well, when you get out to developing countries, you know, less developed countries, people aren't going to be able to afford or want to spend money on a subscription yet. Do they not have some utility in providing us with information, sharing information, getting information? Yeah. So the question of what it would look like is a complete imponderable. I think it's one of those sort of multiverse things where it would sort of look okay. Like everything everywhere all the time.
Yeah. Okay, Ian, what about the competition? Would a Musk takeover of Twitter be good for the platform's competitors? Does it really have any serious competitors?
It does not really have any serious competitors. There was a lot of noise made about Truth Social. Donald Trump recently left the board just before an SEC investigation began. They've struggled from technical problems. They've struggled with the user acquisition. Twitter is one of the stickiest platforms, especially social media platforms, on the planet. It doesn't really have any direct competition, certainly not in the West, though it's a different story in China. And to Charles' point, you know, I don't think taking Twitter private would be entirely a terrible idea. I mean, which is ostensibly what Musk is offering to do, though he's just going about it in a terrible way. The pressure on Twitter to post, you know, growth, to post profits, drives them towards, in the same way it has driven Meta and all other social media platforms, towards this kind of engagement metric, which is generated through sort of extreme agreement or extreme outrage. I think Twitter, as a one of the most useful social platforms, could benefit from having the pressure of that growth taken off them, which could be done by taking the company private, allowing them to sort of really focus on product development. It could be done by, you know, some kind of regulation that would mean that they wouldn't have to focus on, you know, pleasing investors at every turn, and could instead develop the platform into a more honed and accurate tool for its users and for the people that need it every day to access information.
All right. Jim, I've got about 40 seconds here. How's this going to play out? Will Musk be forced to buy Twitter at the agreed price? Who's going to blink first?
Well, I think the court case will say that he is required to buy Twitter. which is very different than him actually buying Twitter. He's got a long history of sort of disagreeing with regulatory agencies' rulings. And so what happens if the court in Delaware says you must complete your acquisition and he just refuses, right? They can try to compel him to do that, but it's really difficult to force somebody to buy something they don't want. So then you get into the case of, you know, what are the damages there? Does he pay the $1 billion? I think Twitter would say that's not nearly enough for all the damages you've done to us. So we're going to be in that gray area, and it's all going to be a negotiation as to how much he does pay, and does he end up owning Twitter in the end?
Gentlemen, that was fascinating, but we're out of time. Many thanks indeed for being with us today. Really appreciate it. Jim Anderson in New York, Charles Arthur in London, and Ian Myers also in New York. As always, thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the programme again at any time by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can join us at our Facebook page at facebook.com/AJInsideStory, and you can join the conversation on Twitter, our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again. Bye for now.